Why James Did Not Write James by Bart D. Ehrman, read by John Paul Middlesworth. Here I conclude my string of posts dealing with whether James, the brother of Jesus, wrote the book of James, as the book itself implicitly claims. Again, this is taken from my more academic study, Forgery and Counterforgery, but I've edited it a bit for an audience of regular folk instead of irregular scholars. In my previous post, I talked about how our ancient sources everywhere talk about the major concerns and interests of the historical James and his focus on the Torah and keeping the law. Does this book reflect any of his widely known interests? The book of James hints towards a James-like audience, as it is addressed to the 12 tribes, that is, the faithful Jews scattered throughout the world. What is striking is that none of the cultural or cultic concerns of James of Jerusalem is in evidence in the book. Just the opposite. The book is thoroughly concerned about the law, but not about the aspects of the law that James himself is reported to have been interested in. Here, in the book of James, the law more or less involves the love commandment, chapter 2, verse 8, and the Decalogue, 2:10 through 12. There is nothing about ritual, or cult, or kosher food laws, or Sabbath, or feast days, or circumcision, or anything at all involving Jewish ethnic identity. The law is a moral code given by God, applicable to all people. In other words, just those aspects of law otherwise attested as of supreme interest to James of Jerusalem are absent here. It cannot be replied that this is to be expected in a letter principally written to Gentiles. The address indicates that the intended audience is Jewish. One can go further and argue that what is emphasized in this letter runs precisely counter to what we would expect from the pen of James, the leader of the circumcision party. This author is concerned not with the works of the law, in the sense used by Paul in opposition to those of the circumcision, that is, the aspects of the law that established Jewish identity in a pagan world. His concern is instead with good works, that is, doing good deeds to benefit other people. Of course, there is no reason to think that the historical James would have objected to the notion that good deeds were an important aspect of the life of one following Jesus. But it is not the area of law that he is otherwise identified with. His own interests were the same as Paul's, even if he took a position contrary to the apostle of the Gentiles on those issues. He was interested in works of the law, not good deeds. In this connection, it is interesting to notice which sins and failures occupy the author of the letter. They are, by and large, not explicit violations of the Torah, but moral shortcomings, such as showing favoritism, not controlling one's speech, and failing to help those in need. So too, what is true religion for this author? It has little to do with the specific requirements of the Torah, per se. It involves bridling the tongue and visiting orphans and widows in their affliction, chapter 1, 26 and 27. It also involves keeping unstained from the world, which would seem to open up the door for a discussion of cultural separatism. But instead of detailing the importance of maintaining Jewish identity in light of the world's staining influence, the author speaks only of upright moral behavior. Again, this is not an un-Jewish concern. It is simply not the concern attested otherwise for James of Jerusalem. This author speaks of fulfilling the entire law, but says not a word about Sabbath, circumcision, purification laws, kashrut, or festivals. Further indications that the letter is not written by James are given by the intimations that it was written at a relatively late date within the development of early Christianity, after James had died, presumably sometime in the 60s. For one thing, the debate over whether it was important for Christians to engage in good works is itself evidenced in the post-Pauline period. In Paul's day and James, the pressing issue had to do with the relationship of believers in Jesus to the works of the law. Only later, as we will see more fully below, did that concern migrate into a conflict over the importance or irrelevance of doing good deeds for salvation. Another indication of a late date is the concern over ostentatious wealth in the community. Wealthy people have come into the congregations and caused problems, both by their very presence, The Problem of Favoritism, Chapter 2, 1 through 5, and by their actions, Dragging the Poor into Court, 2-6. That rich members of the community formed a sizable minority is evident from the charge of 5, 1-6. And how early in the history of the Christian communities could this have been a problem? Surely not in the first decades. So, too, we learn that even though the coming of the Lord is at hand, in chapter 5, 8, and 9, people need to exercise the patience of Job in waiting for it. This seems to indicate that a good deal of time has passed in the expectation of the parousia, so much so that people have grown highly impatient and need proverbial patience in order to quell their anxieties. Consonant with these considerations is the fact that elders appear to be in charge of the community, 5:14, a development that appears closer to what we find, say, in the pastoral epistles than in the letters of Paul written during James's lifetime. These indications of late date and the Hellenized language not only show that the letter was not written by James, but also that it was not commissioned by him in his lifetime, a view that is rendered highly improbable on other grounds as well, as discussed earlier when I considered the widespread but faulty view among scholars that early Christian authors employed others to write their works for them. This book, in short, claims to be written by someone who did not write it. It is our earliest extant work produced in the name of James, brother of Jesus, and head of the church in Jerusalem. But like its later counterparts, it too is forged in his name.